Hello everyone, this is Sean Ennis with the MMA Torchcast for June 22nd, 2007. Coming to you a day early this week, sometimes days early depending on when we get the cast out, but we're coming to you early this week regardless because we've got the Strikeforce card coming up. Joining me this week is Jerry Catalane. Jerry, how's it going?
It's going well, man. It's going well. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I hear you. Long day today, man. Long week.
Gosh, you know, I tell you, it's been just one of them weeks. On the other hand, you know, from the columnist perspective, got a lot to cover this weekend. And
this is true.
It's good.
It's true. What's that?
I said it's good because it keeps you busy. Idle hands,
yeah.
Devil's plaything. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Yeah, it's been a slow week on the site for columns, so it's kind of nice to have the podcast to at least catch up on some stuff.
Exactly.
You know, usually I'll get my column out Monday, but man, it's just been, work's just been nuts. But
oh,
anyway, nobody wants to hear about my job. let's hop right into this thing. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. We're gonna end the show with the Strikeforce preview and the Tough finale preview. Let's start it off with a couple of rumors. It was floating around earlier this week. Now, before it was thrown out there that Mike Bisping was going to fight Matt Hamill at UFC 75 in London. Then earlier this week it came out, I believe, Fight Opinion might have been reporting that it was actually going to be Ken Shamrock that was fighting Bisping, which you know, threw everybody into an uproar. All the hardcores that you know, including us, that were saying what is going on with this? You know, how can Shamrock possibly come back to this? And now it seems that the Hamill is still on the card. Oh no, it was the Fight Network. It was the Fight Network that was reporting. Yeah, that Ken Shamrock was coming out. Now Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer is coming out saying that Hamill's still on the card. So give me your impressions of this so far, Jerry. As far as Hamill, and let's hear what you got to think about Shamrock too. What do you think?
Well, you know, I thought this was on a twofold way. Really, this is kind of surprising news. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not sure there's anybody that wants to see Ken Shamrock back in the cage, you know, and this is no disrespect to Ken Shamrock, who, you know, is certainly one of the pioneers of modern MMA, is a great sports personality. You know, I certainly give him all the credit in the world for being the fighter he is, but I think, you know, his time is past, and to put him in there against Bisping, I think, would have done him, it wasn't a win-win situation for anybody. I mean, certainly not for Bisping if somehow he lost the fight, and, you know, certainly not for Ken if he got destroyed. So as far as the Ken Shamrock rumors go, I'm glad he's not fighting on this card, and I'd prefer to, you know, have Ken remain in graceful retirement such as it is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's really no point in, you know, seeing Ken go out there. And, I mean, the last time we saw Ken, you know, he got pounded twice in a row by Tito Ortiz, who I think we all agree is right now not really in contention in the championship ranks of the division, and there's no point in Ken making a spectacle of himself, I don't think. As far as Hamill goes, I think this is the right fight at the right time, and I think a lot of people will look around and say, why Hamill, why now? And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were watching Tough Season 3, and everybody expected Matt Hamill to be the next big thing, especially under the wing of Tito Ortiz. You know, you had the rundown and the anticlimactic finish where I think everybody was, you know, really foreseeing a Hamill-Bisping final, and it never came to pass. So I think this is kind of your Ultimate Fighter Season 3 true finale, if you will, when these two go at it. And I think Hamill, you know, will present some problems for Bisping. It's really going to be a clash of styles, and I think it really makes the fight pretty intriguing. I think you can't do this fight really any later than they're doing it. I think the time for this fight is now, because I think if you know, if you threw Bisping in there against somebody else of similar or less status and Bisping goes over, I think you got to start looking at Bisping to compete in the upper echelons of the division, and there's really no time to come back to this fight unless Hamill starts making some moves in UFC himself. So the time is now for this fight, and I truly think that where Bisping is, at least after watching him in his fight against Sinisek, that Hamill will present some issues for Bisping, especially if when this fight goes to the ground. And if Hamill's been really, you know, getting anything out of training with Team Punishment, it might be a long night for Bisping in his home country.
Yeah. You know, you bring up a couple of interesting points, and I don't know if Now, for me, I don't know if I'm like everybody else or like other people that watched The Ultimate Fighter. But once the season of The Ultimate Fighter is over, every fight that's been on that season completely leaves my mind. I have no idea who fought whom. None.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's like I remember that Hamill was off the show because of injury or sickness or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But in my brain, if you had asked me, I would have no idea that they were on a collision course for the finale. I couldn't remember it for the world.
I remember it only because it was one of the underlying storylines of the show that Bisping was a little put off that Ortiz was giving Hamill so much attention. You'll recall they were both on the same team.
This is true. Yeah, I do remember that.
And Bisping went over both of his opponents in the preliminary rounds with extreme aggression.
Yeah.
And it really became the Bisping versus Hamill show, at least in my mind, for season three. And that's I think that's the tagline that fight will be marketed under when they start pumping 75 up. But on the face of it, looking at it objectively, we haven't seen Hamill in really a little while, and it'll be interesting to see how he's progressed.
Yeah, you're very true, very right about that. It'll be an interesting kind of a watermark fight for both guys to see where each is. Hamill, I don't expect Hamill to win the fight. I don't expect him to be a pushover either. So I think it kind of goes both ways. You know, if Bisping beats Hamill, then maybe he gets, you know, a little bit higher up on the ladder. If Hamill wins, of course, you know, he kind of shows that he's for real, because Bisping is a good fighter. You know, he's 13-0, and I don't care who you fought to get to 13-0. 13-0 is pretty impressive.
Right, 13-0 is 13-0, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Hamill will be certainly the underdog, but you know, he's got a ground and pounder's chance against Bisping, who I thought looked very suspect against Sinisek.
Yeah, it's true. It'll be interesting because Hamill's a strong guy. I think this will be telling for Bisping.
Yep, actually,
for both guys, like we were saying.
Yeah, but I have no interest in seeing Ken Shamrock in the cage again, other than in a ceremonial sense. I don't want to see him fight anymore because I don't care what he says. I guess it would be the second fight against Tito. He was on his way to absorb in a beating, and there's just there's no need for it.
Oh yeah, I'm totally with you there. I see no reason to bring Ken Shamrock back. Other than he's a personality, great guy, you know, all that kind of stuff. But shouldn't be fighting anymore.
I agree. I mean, you leave the spectacle fights in Pride.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just mer.
Yeah. Speaking of Pride, we have got reports on both FightOpinion.com and UFC Junkie that Pride is scheduled to make a return, according to Japanese media, on August 18th, which would be a Japanese All Stars kind of show, kind of centered around Hirohiko Yoshida, which is interesting. We kind of talked about this a little while ago with the UFC bringing over all the big Pride guys, how they might just leave Pride as kind of a place for the local favorites to fight and kind of leave it for, you know, the circuit fights like they were before. And I think this is kind of the first step towards that. You know, I don't see Pride, I'll say it again, I don't see Pride being a competitor with the UFC. I think it's kind of silly to even do that, but also it would be, you know, there's something to be said for leaving Pride as it is, you know, as far as a fighting organization, leaving it out there because it has name recognition,
right.
And putting out those Japanese fighters because obviously they're going to come watch them.
Exactly. I think in the grand scheme of things, you're going to see Pride become more of a regional. Granted, it's a big region, but a regional promotion, mm-hmm. and the UFC is going to be the major leagues, if you will, of MMA.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing that already in terms of, which fighter is being lined up for the next two or three pay-per-views, that ultimately when a fighter wants to get known and really fight for the world champion title, they're going to be fighting in the UFC. But at some point I would imagine your divisions get too large and that you have to have kind of these, I don't want to say minor leagues because that really demeans, it's not really minor leagues, but regional regional shows, your European champion, your Asian champion, your, you know, Pride champion, and ultimately you might see a Super Bowl sort of combination of regional promotions under a big UFC Super Bowl banner. And I think that's kind of what they're – that's kind of the plan. There have been a couple of reports, actually. You know, you mentioned UFC Junkie that – you know, that Dana White was quoted that dissolving Pride FC certainly is still a, quote, possibility, end quote. So I still think it's very much up in the air there what's going to happen next. They've been stagnant so long that I think if you own that property, truly own that property, then you have to put some sort of event up there soon just to keep interest alive on that side of the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think as far as America goes, they're pretty much dead in the water in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I mean, you know, they don't need – Pride doesn't need to be here. You know, the UFC, I mean, why bring another major league promotion over here to compete? It just doesn't make sense, you know,
right,
to do that. I understand how people say competition is good for the sport. I don't know that it is, honestly. Something I'm going to be – it's a big conversation that we could go into. It's something I'm going to be writing about here coming up. But in the long run, and, you know, as far as organizations competing for viewers, I don't know that that's it's great for the sport in a pay-per-view culture.
No, I don't personally. I don't think it is either. I think you kind of lose that with boxing. You don't want to go down the boxing road.
Yeah.
That you have
yeah.
all these promotions and organizations, pimping their champions and whatnot. The last thing you want is that sort of segregation. I think that it doesn't hurt to have a major league and then minor leagues to develop talent or what have you that can be successful on a smaller scale, not unlike Major League Baseball in this country, you know, or any of the major sports that you have a farm system. I think that ultimately is the way I'd like to see MMA go, at least in North America.
I'll be interested to see what I know. Mike Jarslick is going. He's going to be having some columns up about the amateur scene. I really think that's going to be a big part of the future of MMA, is the amateur scene.
I think as the amateur scene grows again, it'll promote the farm system, if you will.
Yeah.
To where you have even within the United States and Canada, you know, regional promotions that develop talent that farm out to the UFC, as opposed to four or five promotions trying to fight it out with the UFC. And like I say, I mean, looking at the Strikeforce card, not to jump too far ahead of us, but, you know, at $34.95, it looks like a good card and worth the money, largely because you have two or three big mouths on the card that make it fascinating. I mean, if you can sit through the Strikeforce promo on EliteXC.com for 29 minutes and not think, geez, I'd like to see this fight, you know, for $35, then you're probably not a fan of MMA in a hardcore sense, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think ultimately I agree with you that, and also unification and consolidation will lead to better regulation of the sport.
Yep.
You know, I'm surprised the Hoist Gracie story hasn't gone bigger yet.
Yeah.
It seems like it's kind of slinked off into a corner, which to me, I've said this before, if Hoist tested positive, so positive, mind you, that they couldn't measure it.
Yeah.
That is a ominous bellwether for MMA fighters all over, because if Hoist is doing it, then in my opinion anybody could be.
Yeah.
And that's not a good that's not what you want heading into the genesis of a mainstream push.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think part of the reason that hasn't gone big here, at least in the States, is because Hoist is Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a domestic fighter. And you know, that's not to say that nobody cares. I mean, you know, obviously fans of MMA know who Hoist Gracie is.
Oh, yeah.
But those are the only people who know who Hoist Gracie is, you know.
Well, and that's true. That's true. But like you said, there's only, you know, there's only so many fighters that carry a significant Q rating as it is. I mean, up until he lost the belt, Chuck Liddell was one. Quentin Jackson will become another one.
Oh, yeah.
Tito Ortiz has a Q rating.
Yeah.
After that, you know, you can argue Randy Couture with his appearances on Spike. You know, but there's not that many fighters that command that sort of attention. You know, Hoist is important because he is a pioneer.
Yep.
And you know, you would hate to see some of these young fighters come up and then get the Q rating, get the name recognition, be out there in the public eye, become equivalent to, you know, boxers, if you will, in terms of public knowledge, and then, you know, get the Barry Bonds treatment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's pretty much it for headlines as far as, you know, news goes. We were only on about 3 days ago, so not too. All things considered, it's been a pretty pretty big news week so far. But let's look ahead to this weekend. I'm going to start with Saturday's event, and then we'll end up with Strikeforce. Let's look at the Ultimate Fighter finale for season 5. We'll start with the prelims. Just kind of go through a rapid fire kind of thing. I think there's a lot to say about these fights at the bottom of the card, but we'll go through them. Some of them, sure, but we'll go through them one by one. We got Brian Garrity versus Matt Wyman.
I like Wyman in this one. Garrity was a nice little personality, kind of updating us along on the show and whatnot, but I was surprised when Wyman lost, and I think that I think he's going to take Garrity out. I think he's got too many tools. That's my kind of quick thumbnail on him.
Yeah, I agree. I have Wyman in this one. I haven't decided when or how yet, but I've got Wyman.
I forgot. This is so I can become the number one contender again.
Yeah.
better couch my picks from Pelkey.
Yeah, and speaking of which, how many times do you go 8-0 on a friggin' card and not get the number one contender spot?
You just have bad luck.
I know. I've been second like 3 times in a row now. Ridiculous.
I mean, you've come to the point where, you know, you can't just pick the fights, but you have to really concentrate on how the fights are going to end.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, I think that's your key now,
because
getting to the top.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's because I'm a Philly guy.
Is that the
reason? All my teams lose. You know, they all get to the finals and lose. I come in second in the prediction championship. That's what it is.
Well, you're still we'll see who gets to the number one contendership here again. I'm feeling pretty confident. I was a little irritated. I went 7-1 and didn't even finish in the top 5. Gosh darn it. All because I had to go off on that pick, freaking Big C Robinson draw. Anyway, but I'll go with Wyman here along with you. I think I'd be surprised if you didn't pick this one up.
Yeah, I agree. Let's look at Leonard Garcia versus Al Monsta Barubi.
Oh my lord! this is going to be if this makes the main card, which it's kind of up there on the card. It looks like it might be shown. This is a showcase for Garcia. This is a reward for Garcia for, you know, having a great fight with Roger Huerta. That's what this is, and this is punishment for Alan Berube for his role in the in the backyard brawl. And I we've said this before a couple times that I can't see possibly how Fighter X is going to win.
Yeah.
I can't see possibly how Berube is going to win.
No, I see no possible way.
You know, I just don't see it. Garcia had a great fight against Huerta and actually had Huerta in trouble a couple times. So
yeah,
this is Alan Berube's one appearance on the main stage, and he's going to get cooked like a lobster, I think.
Yeah.
Garcia. Just
yeah.
Couple coins, submission or KO in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll probably end up seeing this on the main card if it goes the way it probably should go. I can see Dana White coming up to Garcia and saying, you know what, finish this guy off quick and we'll get you on the main podcast.
Yeah. I mean, the over-under on this has got to be maybe a minute and a half.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking under 2 minutes here.
Exactly. Yeah, not much to say there. Good for Leonard Garcia. I look forward to seeing him. I look forward to seeing him against some real competition eventually.
Yeah, I agree. Because, that was a heck of a fight against Roger Huerta.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we got Rob Emerson versus Gray Maynard.
I liked Gray Maynard a ton during the show. All things considered, I mean, you know, there's a time lapse between when they end the show and when they fight now, of course. I am hoping he's improved, some of his defensive skills. Emerson lost twice, if I'm not mistaken, on the show.
Yep.
So I don't see him picking up the victory here. I think this is Maynard's to win on the ground and either take him up by probably strikes. I see a ground and pound win for Gray here. Just too much ground game. And Not much I can say for Rob here. I hope he puts up a good fight, but undercard fight. Undercard fight.
Yeah, it is, and I'm with you here with Maynard. I think he's going to get the ground and pound victory. Emerson, he lost to Nate Diaz, I believe, and was it Lozon too?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So two of the better fighters on the show. I mean, obviously Diaz is in the final, and Lozon is a beast, as we all know. But I don't know. He didn't seem like a real well-rounded fighter. He looked kind of lost on the ground, and I think that's
very very one-dimensional. I thought.
Yeah.
Against a guy that actually is the other dimension from him.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
doesn't bode well in the cage.
Yeah. Next up, we have Cole Miller versus Andy Wang.
I think there's another lopsided fight, quite honestly.
I agree.
I think Wang is too stubborn. At least, and this is how they present them on the show, but you can't look at Andy Wang on that show and not think that this is a headstrong kid who is stubborn and, based on what you see, isn't really going to improve his game. Cole, on the other hand, I thought looked pretty well-rounded to begin with, and I think he has too many skills for Andy, and I think this is another lopsided fight. I think this is Cole Miller all the way by strikes.
Yeah.
Probably on the ground, pounding him out. I think Andy will try to trade with him, but I think Cole's too big and just too lanky, and he's got that kind of modern MMA look to him, long arms, big reach, very flexible, lots of cardio, and that is certainly the way of the future, obviously in the lightweight division, but even in the 170 division, you're looking at guys that have that build.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely with you on this one as well. I think Cole Miller is one of the guys that showed a lot of promise to be really good in the future in the UFC. I think he's one of the guys that they could bring up slowly, and he could really turn into something special. I think this one goes, I think Wang will take him into second, maybe third round, maybe even decision, but I think Miller gets a pretty lopsided win here.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, we got Joe Lozon and Brandon Melendez.
How can you not like Joe Lozon?
I mean, tell you.
He has that look about him that he's the kid that, wore the button-downs in school.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you read about him in the newspaper. I mean, he's just got a great look to him. He's got great skills. I was surprised not to see him make the final.
Yeah, I was too.
Brandon Melendez is not a bad fighter, I don't think.
No.
I think this is probably one of the better fights in terms of matchups, but I think Melendez is just outclassed here by Lozon. I don't think it's any shame to Melendez, quite honestly. I think Melendez is going to give him a good fight. I think this is probably going to go the distance, but I think Lozon is going to get him, get the tap or get a late tap or, win a decision, because I just think he's just got better overall skills. And Lozon is kind of a made product now, as opposed to a development product. And I think that's between him and a lot of the guys on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I've got Lozon in this one as well. I think he'll probably overwhelm him with strikes maybe in the second round or so. Maybe pound him out. I don't know. But I've definitely got Lozon winning this one.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Melendez maybe even is a little bit underrated from what I saw on the show. But at the same time, I don't think he's on the level of Lozon.
No, he's not at the level of Lozon yet.
Yeah.
He may never get to the level of Lozon, but I think Melendez is a good fighter, and I think that he's going to put on a good show, and you'll see Melendez again somewhere on an undercard somewhere.
Yeah.
He'll be around for a while.
Yeah. Next up, we have Talis Lytus versus Floyd Sword, with an interesting last name. What about this one?
I think there's a showcase for Lytus. Kind of sneaking him into the card here. An Ultimate Fighter dominated card. I think he's got some. Obviously, he's got some great skills on the ground. Very well-rounded fighter. I'll be honest with you. I don't know a ton about Floyd Sword. I think he's kind of being fed the latest at this point to kind of get the live show rolling.
Yeah.
But latest is someone certainly to watch in the middleweight division. you know, this is Sword's first fight in the UFC. You know, he's got a loss to Bobby Southworth and Marvin Eastman, so I think that his resume is reasonable, but he ain't got no wins there. So,
yeah,
this is going to be a tough fight for him. I think this is Laitis all the way, and I'm looking for Laitis by tap somewhere in the late first, early second.
Yeah, another thing about Sword, he fought twice last year, but before that, he didn't fight for, you know, since 2003. You know, it's not to say he wasn't active in, you know, any other kind of sport. I don't know if he's a jiu-jitsu guy or a kickboxer or what have you. He may have been doing that kind of stuff, but I also don't know too much about him.
Doesn't bode well for the cage, though.
No, not at all. Latest, I don't know if you saw his his fight against Martin Campman. I think it was an undercard fight against, and
I did.
You did see that one.
I did. I thought it was a good fight.
Oh man, but that was a brutal pounding that Cannon put on him, but he never went down.
Yep, but I thought says a lot for the guy though.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, he's got a chin made of cast iron.
Yeah, he's a Brazilian guy who probably wants to fight on the ground most of the time. Who took some big shots, and I don't think that hurts him. I don't think that hurts him at all.
No, I don't either. I think that did show a lot about him. You know that he's. I mean, I don't know how you knock the guy out if Cannon couldn't do it with
shots
the strikes he was throwing.
I remember that.
My gosh.
He threw some big shots. There's no doubt about
it. Yeah, nasty stuff. And I got latest by this one probably by tap out as well. But it'll be interesting to see because you know as we said you know we really don't know anything about Sword. He may be a jiu-jitsu master and we don't know it. But you know,
Time will tell.
Yeah. Next up, we've got another showcase fighter, what seems to be anyway, Roger Huerta, who recently graced the cover of Sports Illustrated, taking on relative newcomer Doug Evans, making his debut in the octagon. What do you see in this one?
If I'm not mistaken, Huerta's the first MMA cover boy, isn't he?
I believe that is true.
I don't think there's ever been anybody MMA on the cover before, even in the old days when... statements. I could be wrong, but
Tito Ortiz, I think, was on the cover at one point.
I'm gonna have to go look at that. I'm gonna check that out. He'd be an interesting trivia question if he was.
Yeah.
Clearly, Huerta's fight the win. You know, what can you say about this guy that you haven't seen already in his last two fights? You know, has a lot of skill, heavy hands, good on the ground, very flexible. Now he's fighting a guy that's coming in. You know, an Alaska Fighting Championship veteran, 5-0, and it's one of these guys that I've never seen him fight.
Yep.
I don't know any of the guys he's fought. I couldn't tell you really anything about Alaska Fighting Championship. And you don't know what this guy brings to the table. Now, if he somehow brings up, is good enough to knock off Huerta, then this is another guy they've pulled out of the rough to surprise everybody. Clearly, Huerta's a known fighter, and he's very, very good. And you have to go with him unless you have some inside information on Evans or you've seen this guy fight or, you're his mom or something.
Yeah.
You kind of got to go with Huerta here just because Huerta is, Huerta is one of those guys that should be moving up the lightweight ladder anytime now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Huerta's, he's 13-0-1 in his last 14 fights. Hasn't lost since 2004. And he's just a monster. I mean, the guy can go all day. Again, it's like you said, Doug Evans, is it going to be Frankie Edgar? Is he going to be Houston Alexander?
You
just don't know. I mean, he's 5-0. Obviously he's fought in a lot of fighting championships. Doesn't really, not against any big names, anything like that. It's an intriguing fight that could go, it could go the distance. And it could be, a first-round knockout. These are the ones that are dangerous. If Huerta goes in there thinking with the Keith Thurman mindset, then there could be some trouble. If he goes in there with the Dean Thomas mindset, then he should be okay.
Exactly. I agree. It's tough to pick the unknown when you know nothing about the guy.
It is. It is, but as a pick, I'm going to go with Huerta by strikes in the first.
I think I have something similar. I think I've got I have Huerta by TKO sometime in the first as well.
Yeah, Yeah.
He just brings such an intense pace.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see what Evans is made of. I mean, we'll see what this guy's got, because Huerta will bring it, especially being on the, you know, the on deck card on the card. You know, that's a big showcase for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we have the fight that will decide the Ultimate Fighter 5 championship, Nathan Diaz versus Manny Gamburian.
And here we go. Last week, you know, I love Gamburian. I just like the attitude he brings. I like the intensity he brings. I just think his style is completely wrong for Diaz. And I think it's going to cost him. You know, Manny fights with a lot of aggression and a lot of intensity and a frenetic pace. And, you know, we talked about this last week. You know, Nate, I think, is the snake in the woods just waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I see Manny, you know, pushing the pace, getting inside, getting a takedown, getting top position. And I see Nate just working to get him in a triangle, you know, taking a couple shots here and there, absorbing a punch, you know, a little punishment, you know, taking an elbow here, taking an elbow there, and just waiting until he catches Manny posturing up too far and he nails him, gets him in a triangle. So I got to go with Diaz here, even though I think Gamburian is a fighter that the UFC would be well to put some time into. Or Zuffa should anyway. The fight I would like to see would be, you know, Gamburian and Uriah Faber at like a catch weight of like 148 or something.
Yeah.
I think that would just be a frenetic action, back and forth, up and down sort of wild battle. And I would love to see that in, you know, WEC or what have you. But I just think Nate's too much for him on the ground from a defensive posture. And I think Nate brings, you know, some reach into play that I just think it's a bad matchup for Manny.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, the way that Diaz fought Gray Maynard was just a masterful kind of display of, you know, laying in wait. You know, he took some shots, but he was fine. He wasn't real hurt. And then he just caught him, you know.
Yep.
And, I mean, I don't know. Manny is strong. We know he's got some good ground skills. I don't know that his submission defense is up to the task of fending off Nate Diaz for three rounds. I don't think it is.
I don't think it is in the sense that Manny, to win the fight, is going to have to go into that position where he has the potential to be submitted to win the fight. I don't think Manny can stand and jab with Nate and win the fight.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Win it on his feet. So I think Manny's going to be obligated to take this fight to the ground, you know, in Nate's guard or half guard or what have you, and that's what's going to – I think he has to go into danger in order to win the fight. And that's part of Manny's problem. Manny was taller, had a little bit of more of an even reach, maybe a little better striking game. And he doesn't have a bad striking game, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But could win the fight on his feet. I would lean more towards picking him. But I think you bring up a good point. I don't think he has a submission defense, and he's going to have to go into the danger zone to win the fight.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And you know, Diaz, he's a guy that'll pick you apart on the feet just like his brother.
Right.
So it's lose-lose for Gamburian, I think. At the same time, I'm dying surprised by him. So if he pulls it off somehow, I'm not going to be shocked, you know?
I will be. I will be shocked because I think – well, no, and here's why, though. I mean, and again, I'm not taking anything away from Gamburian at all. Nate Diaz should win this fight. I mean, like I said, I mean, this is right in his wheelhouse, that he's got a guy that's going to come at him. He'll be able to counterpunch. He'll be able to set up submissions. He's going to have a guy probably in his guard for 10 to 12 minutes of this fight. There's no reason Nate Diaz really – I mean, if he's not going to win this fight – and this is tailor-made for his style, I would think.
Yeah.
So I would be shocked if he lost this fight.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be surprised. Can't happen, but I would be surprised. I'm not shocked. Yeah. Shocked is a little strong.
Yeah.
It surprised me. It would surprise me.
I would be surprised. But at the same time, you know, this is what's cool about these Ultimate Fighter shows is that, you know, you see what these guys can do against each other. And it'll be interesting to see what a guy like Gamburian can do in the 155 division.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously Lozon, who he beat on the last show, is a good fighter. But we really haven't even seen Lozon against top-level competition besides Jens Pulver.
Right.
And, you know, that was a quick knockout. So
right.
it's intriguing with all these guys to see what's going to happen with them. I think Gambieran is definitely going to be a guy to watch to see what happens when he gets in there with a guy like Melvin Gillard or you know, one of those guys.
Somebody that'll stand with him in trade. Yeah, I agree. I think that would be, like I said, this is just a bad matchup for Manny. I think this is going to, he may lose this fight and it may put him in a negative light, but it shouldn't, because this is just not a good matchup for him.
Yeah. Well, but and if you had taken a poll, you know, 3 weeks ago, who thought that Gambieran was even going to be here?
Oh, nobody. Very few.
I mean, nobody even thought he was going to be a semifinalist, let alone a finalist.
No, very few. I agree. Very few.
So I think Gambieran's already won. I mean, you know, as far as that goes, he doesn't have to win this fight.
He's made his bones. I mean, he's shown Dana White he can fight, and he's not afraid to get in there and fight. And, you know, he has made the impression that he needs to make. Now, granted, if he pulls the upset somehow, then his life is good. I mean, he's golden.
Yeah.
He is golden.
Yeah, I think we got Diaz submission in the second round.
I got it going, I think, a little later. I got it in the third, but I still have him getting the tap.
Yeah, I can see that. Too.
Later. I think Gambieran, I think he'll just, you know, I don't want to say he'll get tired and winded, but I think he's gonna make a mistake somewhere, and Nate's going to pounce on him. It'll be a shame, but it'll be a good fight, I think.
Yeah. All right. We're moving on to the main event. We have BJ Penn versus Jens Pulver. What do you got here? This is an interesting fight. This is going to be a good one.
This is where it's tough to be trying to get into the, you know, this is where it's tough to be in the production contest. I'll tell you right now, I am gonna lay money on Jens Pulver when the fight comes along, just because I'll detail my reasons here, and I realize I'm probably going to be in the minority, but here are my reasons. Yes, Pulver lost his last fight to Joe Lauzon. No question about it. Got knocked out. Okay. These things happen. Pulver owns a win over Penn already. Granted, it was years ago, but he already has a win over Penn, and I don't think you can discount the significance of that. Neither of these fighters have been real active, real active. Although, you know, you look at it and you think to yourself, well, BJ's been the far more active fighter, when in reality, that's not necessarily true.
Yep.
You know, if we look at Pulver's recent record, if you go back to August of 2003, he's got three losses. You know, the loss to Lauzon, he got TKO'd by Hayato Sakurai, which, you know, no shame, one of the best in the world. He got KO'd by Takanori Gomi, who many feel is the number one guy in the world in his division.
Yep.
So certainly he's been around. BJ, on the other hand, has lost three out of his last four.
Yep.
Losing to Matt Hughes, enough said. George St. Pierre, enough said. And Ryoto Makeda, which is a bit of a surprise, but there you have it.
Yeah.
I think this fight is going to be closer than people think. I do not see BJ rolling way over Jens Pulver. I just don't, and I can see Pulver landing a couple shots and getting to BJ, getting the advantage, and pounding BJ out. I don't know why, but it would not surprise me if it happened. I'm probably going to lean towards going with Jens in this one, just because I think he's got something to prove.
Yeah,
it's another guy that's got something to prove. That was he. You know, here's Jens that was at the top of the mountain, was an underdog to BJ once, overcame the odds and won. And now he's kind of forgotten. He's been dragged back into the MMA mainstream, if you will, by virtue of The Ultimate Fighter. And I think Jen strikes me as an opportunistic sort of guy. And this is his opportunity. And BJ, on the other hand, who is clearly one of the most talented fighters probably in any division. Okay, I mean, if you look at pure potential and pure skill, I think BJ Penn is as talented as anybody. It just seems that when he gets in this spot, he can't close the deal. I mean, there are many that suggest that, you know, the Hughes fight and the GSP fight, he was winning.
Yep.
And he lost both of them. And whether that's conditioning, whether that's mental, whether that's psychological, that's hard to say, but the fact is that BJ Penn has not won an MMA fight since July of 2005.
Yeah.
Nearly 2 years. And that was to Renzo Gracie in a decision. So, yeah, you know, I don't think Jens is that much of a long shot here. I really don't. I think he can win this fight. Now, you know, if he fights tentatively and lets BJ dictate the pace, he's going to lose. But I think if he pushes the pace, pressures BJ, tries to land blows, fights aggressively, I think that's how he's got to win the fight. I agree he's the underdog, but I think he can win. I may reverse course a little bit before that and chicken out. Now, I'll admit I may chicken out and reverse my pick, but right now I'm talking myself kind of like Quentin Jackson. I had to kind of look at it objectively, and now I'm looking at it objectively here. There's no, you know, why can't Jen Pulver win this fight?
Yeah.
No, I mean, is it that outlandish to suggest he can win? No, I don't think it's outlandish at all. Is he underdog? Absolutely. Should he be the underdog? Definitely. Can he win? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave it right there and kind of give up the floor for a moment.
I'm agreeing with you on this one. I've got Pulver taking the decision. And if you look at it, if you use history as an indicator, BJ Penn historically does not get all that motivated, I mean, or has not gotten all that motivated to train, to be in great shape for a fight. You know, whether he gassed against Matt Hughes, whether he was injured against Matt Hughes, I don't know. I tend to think that he was injured in that third round, and he
fought injured in that third round.
Yeah, and he may have won that fight. Yeah, he did, and he may have won that fight. He may not have. I don't know. But you know, if BJ fails this, and it's going to be the same kind of thing as I said when he fought Hughes, if it's a stoppage win, I think BJ Penn wins it, because I don't think Pulver can stop him. If it's a decision win, I think Pulver takes it. I think it'll be conditioning, and Pulver will just take it. And it's a tough fight to call, because you don't know when you see a BJ Penn fight, you don't know who's showing up, especially when he fights at 155. The last time he fought at 155 was against Matt Serra in 2002.
Right.
So, you know, how is his cut going to go? Who knows? I don't know how his
round
cut's
to
go.
Round to round, you don't know what you're getting with BJ Penn.
Exactly. Had to
fight the fight. Round to round, you don't know what you're
getting
with BJ Penn. The GSP fight was a good example. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I was
that's
just
why,
gonna bring
that's
that up.
Why, that's why it was a split decision.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. Is that, you know, the first round, BJ dominated. The second and third round, he got dominated. You know,
right.
Say what you will about the split decision, I thought it was clear that St. Pierre won that fight. Handily in the second and third round, but I, you know, if BJ Penn comes in there and he's motivated and he is trained like he should have, and he's you know, his cut went well, then he's got a really good shot at beating Pulver, and beating him pretty quickly. But if, you know, if he's been lackadaisical, if he was motivated at first and then kind of was like, oh, okay, I'm good for the last couple of months and just kind of floated through the rest of his training, then I think Pulver's getting the decision. And if we're using history to tell the future, I'm thinking Pulver.
Yeah. Here come the emails.
Yeah.
here come the emails. By all means, feel free to email us at mmatorch.com at the forums to tell us where we've been wrong on this. Penn fans. I think it's a good argument. You know, having said that, BJ will probably come out and submit him in like 35 seconds, but
it could happen. You know.
You know, I mean, you know, if you try to look at this logically, it's hard to discount Pulver. I think that, you know, I keep going back to motivation. You cannot discount somebody's motivation, especially when you've been a mixed martial artist for a few years, and now it's starting to break big, and here is your chance. I mean, this is it. You've got 15 minutes to define the next 5 years of your life. And BJ Penn's legacy, you could argue, is already made. I mean, he has a legion of fans. He has a tremendous reputation. And Jens Pulver, despite being a former champion, does not.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be enough to carry him over. I think he can stop BJ. I think it'll be late, but I could see Pulver, you know, winning on strikes late in the third round, because either Penn's cardio gives out or, you know, Pulver's pushed the pace to the point where he gets the advantage. I could see a late stoppage. I mean, I think he'll probably go to decision. You know, I agree with you. I mean, an early stoppage, I think, is Penn, but I think a late stoppage or decision is definitely, I think that's Pulver.
I can't see Pulver stopping him simply because, you know, BJ's fought at those higher weights. He's fought against George St. Pierre. Matt Hughes, I think, in the second Hughes fight, I don't know that Hughes was even hurting him. It was just a matter of being in a position where he couldn't defend himself.
When I say stopping it, that's what I mean. I mean, where a referee jumps in, he may not be.
That was my next point. Yeah, that would be the way that he would get a stoppage. But I would see this the same way as far as all that goes. I am looking forward to this card. You know, if only for Huerta, the championship fight, and Pulver Penn. I think those three fights at least are worth tuning in for.
It's free.
Exactly.
But I mean,
you can't really beat that.
It's free.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's. Hey, listen, with the cable bill being what it is this month, and you're looking at a Strikeforce card the night before, free is watchable.
This is what I'm saying.
Free is watchable.
Yes. Yep.
Some popcorns and beverages of your favorite choice, and you know, enjoy some fights.
Yep. All right, well, we can strike force. Let's go ahead and look at that card. Excuse me. Now, there's a lot of guys on here that I am not familiar with. Let's kind of run through the bottom of the card real quick. I don't know that I want to make predictions yet because I haven't had a lot of time to research these guys. Being the long week that it was, and it's only Wednesday. But let's see. The bottom of the card, Steve Jester and Rex Richards. Don't know anything about them.
I didn't hear you.
What's that?
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry. My bad.
No. No, you're fine. Jester, Rex Richards, I know nothing about either guy. Danny Higgins and Eugene Jackson. I've seen Jackson a few times. Kind of one of the older guys. Again, but who knows?
Flip a coin. If you see it, that's good for you.
Yeah. Mike Pyle and Aaron Witherspoon. I have Pyle here. Pyle's a guy that's fought in the IFL a few times.
Yep.
Kind of inconsistent for a little while. But I think the team atmosphere for him was not the best. He's gotten out of that. He's got a win in Strikeforce It was either Strikeforce or Elite.
His record wouldn't suggest that he did, you know, the team atmosphere really played into him, because actually his record's quite good outside of IFL.
Yeah.
Witherspoon's more of a King of the Cage guy, I believe.
Yeah.
But it would seem to me that this would be Pyle by submission.
Yeah, I've got Pyle on this one. Luke Stewart, Jason Von Flew, kind of another one. You know, Von Flew's kind of been a journeyman since his stint on The Ultimate Fighter. He's got some name recognition, that's good for him.
Yeah.
Luke Stewart, no idea.
No idea. Couldn't even find, you know, just tough to find.
Yeah.
Von Flew is a fun fighter to watch, though, I will say that. I mean, if this guy brings anything to the table in terms of aggression, you know, Von Flew will match it. And, you know, that should be relatively entertaining.
Yeah. Von Flew, he's a guy that, you know, he is fun to watch. You know, there was that fight against Joe Riggs. I believe he flipped off the ref before he either tapped or went to sleep.
He was flipping out somebody. I'm not sure if it was.
Yeah.
I thought he was flipping out Riggs for submitting him, but
That may have been
either way. I thought it was quite entertaining. I mean, you know, perhaps a little bit R-rated, whatnot, but you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's mixed martial arts. You got to have a little bit of raunch. I think it was terribly awful. I mean, anyway, should be fun to watch if you can get you the undercard.
Mm-hmm. Next, we have got scheduled to be originally Charles Crazy Horse Bennett versus Victor Valenzuela. Crazy Horse, of course, was picked up in Florida on a parole violation, currently in jail. Strikeforce is in the process of trying to get him out so that he can fight on Friday.
Yep.
Kind of remains to be seen whether he will actually show up to the card or not. In the case that he doesn't show up, James Edzinberto will be taking his spot. What do you know about these guys?
I know that Crazy Horse has been arrested over 20 times. you know, and it's funny, when you watch him fight, he looks like a guy that's been arrested 20 times. I mean, he's a nut. I mean, just the way he fights, he looks like he just got out of the pokey, and this is what he's supposed to do. Allegedly, they have until, like 10:30 either tomorrow morning or Friday morning to get him out of the pokey and get him to the fight. And they're still talking about it's possible. So, you know, there's nothing like drama.
Yeah.
Berto, for his part, is a bit of a striker and kickboxer, I believe, too, who will probably bring kind of the same presentation to Valenzuela, although maybe not the same pace. Either way, I think, you know, since Valenzuela fought Bennett the first time, he's had, you know, nearly a dozen fights since then, and clearly he's a better fighter. And either way, I think Valenzuela is going to win this fight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a toss-up for me because you never know. Crazy Horse is another guy. Never sure what you're going to get.
It'll be Berto, exciting.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It ain't going to be boring.
Yeah. I hope they pull it off and are able to get him out. I'm not an advocate of breaking the law by any means, but but I'd like to see that.
I'm not an advocate of illegal activity of breaking your parole, but if I can watch you pound out some other guy, it'll be okay.
Yeah, call me a prude, but for consistency's sake, I would take Valenzuela just because you don't know what you're going to get with Crazy Horse. By the same token, you could take Crazy Horse for that reason, you know, because you never know what you're going to get.
He's going to come out and throw punches and push the action and throw punches and knees and kick and strike and strike and strike until Valenzuela takes him down and taps him with an armbar.
Yeah.
I think
they did fight once before in King of the Cage. It was a heck of a fight, actually. It ended up being a draw.
A draw,
But... Yeah, it should be a fun fight to watch. And if Berto gets in there, he's another guy. You know, he's got pretty good submissions. Has a lot of wins by heel hook, actually.
Yep.
Was in the Real Fighting Championships for a while. You know, has been there for a lot. Absolute Fighting Championships has been there, and actually has a win over John Shackelford at the last Lytic C event, or the first Lytic C event in February. So you know, neither guy's a pushover for Valenzuela. It's kind of a tough pick, actually, you know, for either way. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go with Valenzuela over Berto. I'm taking Crazy Horse over Valenzuela for that.
The two-way.
Yeah, I'm going that way.
I'll take Joe Boxer either way.
Okay.
Just because I think that he's a much improved fighter since the last time we saw him in the ring with Crazy Horse. And, you know, he's prepared for this fight. I mean, he's prepared for this fight regardless of who he fights.
Yeah. All right, let's look at Tony Fricklin and Kung Lee.
This should be fun. This should really be fun. Kung Lee, who I've seen fight once, just looks like a little animal. I mean, he's just all arms and elbows and knees and blah. I couldn't differentiate San Chow from probably any other fighting style. But man, he makes it look exciting.
Yeah.
Fricklin, on the other hand, isn't a chump. I mean, he's more than a worthy opponent. And he's not exactly somebody that leaves it in the hands of judges either. I think he's only had one decision in his professional career. So.
And that was against Matt Lindland.
So I mean,
yeah.
this should be a fantastic fight to watch. I kind of like Kung Lee in this one. You know, by strikes, but this is a tough one to call because I haven't seen much of these fighters live or you know, Googled, but I've seen enough to know that this is part of the card that is going to be worth you tuning into, you know, pay per view to watch.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think this is the big test for Kung Lee. You know, he fought Von Flew at the last strike first card, and ended up losing or winning by a cut, you know, under a minute into the fight, which was a shame. But this is going to be the test for him. You know, Fricklin is kind of a journeyman. He's lost something over the last couple of years. You know, he's not picked up a lot of wins. I mean, he had three in a row at one point, but not over the big names. You know, when he fights the big guys, he doesn't tend to win.
Yep.
So this will be telling for Kung Lee. I think he takes it by strikes. I think he's just too fast for Fricklin. And he just overwhelms him with strikes maybe late in the first, maybe in the second.
Yep.
But, you know, Fricklin could clinch with him for a little while. It'll be interesting. You know, I'll pick Kung Lee, but it'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that'll be a fun fight to watch. That, you know, if you're entertaining, this will be the time to sit down on the couch and start watching the card for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, we've got Josh Thompson, another exciting fighter against Nick Gonzalez.
A little bit of a toss-up for me here. You know, I think when you look at the relative strengths and weaknesses of these guys, I'm surprised that this is as high up on the card as it is, truthfully, especially when you have intriguing guys like Kung Lee beneath it. But I would look for this to be... I think this is going to be your tentative dance card fight of the night, and I really can't tell you why. I think that it'll take a little while for these guys to warm up, but once they do, I kind of lead towards Thompson, you know, getting a decision win here. But I think this is going to be one that's going to be tough to score, especially for through the first half of the fight.
Yeah, I've got Thompson here as well. I think he'll actually pull off a submission. Maybe halfway through the second round or so. You know, Gonzalez is fine. You know, he's not a pushover by any means, but I think Thompson's just in another league. You know, he's not fought, Gonzalez hasn't fought the kind of competition that Thompson has. You know, he's, he had a few fights in the UFC, you know, beat Hermes Franca, lost to Eve Edwards, fought Clay Guida, you know, Guida took 5 rounds and actually won the decision there, beat Bang Ludwig, you know, so he's just got a wealth of experience against just higher level fighters. So I've got him getting the tap in the second.
Okay. We need some fights. We need some fights to pick against each other on here.
Can't have any. No kidding.
Because you know, if it comes down to technicality, you're going to lose.
Yeah, exactly. This is the whole thing. well, okay, let's look at the next one. We got Dwayne Ludwig and Paul Daly.
This one should be good. I like watching Dwayne Ludwig fight. Anybody's got a nickname like Bang, you know, should be an entertaining fighter, and he is. Daly, for his part, has a pretty impressive record and is on a pretty good run right now. You know, kind of a cage rage sort of guy, and I think he's going to have to step up to fight with Ludwig. And I think that's going to be his problem. I think he'll hang with him early, but I think Ludwig has the better hands. I think Daly's going to try to trade with him, and I think that he's going to get taken out. But I think Daly's going to put on a pretty good show for some reason. But I don't think he's in Ludwig's class just yet. You know, you've been touching on some of the opponents you've been fighting earlier in the conversation here, and you know, he just has a little better resume, and I think he's going to get the TKO. I think he's going to get it probably late first, early second, to be my guess.
Yeah, I would think this one definitely ends with a knockout somewhere. you know, I don't know if did you happen to catch his last fight in cage rage against Paul Jenkins?
Who? Daly?
Yeah.
I did not. I was about to get into it when I was trying to review for this, but I hadn't have enough time to catch up to it. I was busy looking at the main event and listening to it, which enthralled me for hours. I digress.
Sorry. Daly, he excuse me. He won with a punch to the body on Jenkins. Jenkins actually submitted after he got hit with that punch. It was just nasty.
You know, I tell you, the body shot knockout is an indication of how hard some guys hit.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm surprised sometimes with the 4 ounce gloves, you don't see it more often. Because if
you catch somebody
on the lower rib cage, you know, where the 11th, 12th ribs are, over the liver, over the pancreas, whatnot, around the kidney, you know, that's got to be incapacitating.
Well, it is. It's debilitating.
I mean,
three fights off the top of my head, you got Gillard against Rudiger, where Gillard won that fight with a knockout.
Yeah.
Scott Pietzel. Where, you know, Smith ended up winning the fight, but he got, you know,
got cracked
in the ribs for him. And what was the other one? Oh, Hominick and Eve Edwards, where it was actually a kick to the liver that took out Eve Edwards, you know. I mean, he took him down and won the fight after that. Boss Rudin was another guy that had a really nasty liver kick. Krokop had a really nasty liver kick in Pride against Yoshida.
But to do it with a punch.
Yeah.
You know, to do it with a punch.
That's hitting hard.
Oh, that's just pounding the bag right there.
Yeah,
yikes.
Yeah, that's hitting hard. So, yeah, Daly's got some power. That having been said, I think Ludwig has the better all-around team, and I've got Ludwig by TKO in the second.
Yep.
But I certainly think it's going to be a pretty good fight.
I agree.
Or at least fun to watch.
I agree. A lot of banging. Anybody, you know, if you get two guys like to stand and trade, it almost makes for a good fight. If they're willing to both get off and throw, it makes for a good fight.
Yeah. Speaking of guys that like to throw, we've got Paul Bontello taking on Carter Williams.
Where do they dredge up Carter Williams? I mean, I remember seeing Carter Williams like at 4 in the morning on ESPN 50, you know, in some place, somewhere, fighting in some K-1 battle against some guy. You know, I'm not sure where they got – I'm not too familiar with Carter Williams from an MMA perspective. Paul Bontello, though, has no fear and certainly is a guy that likes to stand up and throw. And, Neil Williams, for his part, better be ready to either receive an answer or just receive.
Yeah.
Because Paul's not going to want to go down.
Yeah.
You know, I tried digging up Williams, and allegedly, he hasn't had an MMA fight since October of 2004,
Which
is just a little while ago. In that time, Bontello has only lost to Andrei Arlovsky. So I think Bontello's certainly more for real than not, and I think he's going to dispatch Williams relatively simply with strikes.
Yeah, I think it's too bad that Bontello is not in the UFC still, because he's an exciting fighter. I mean, obviously his last two fights in Strikeforce have not been against top competition, being perennial replacement Ruben Villarreal and Tank Abbott, but
they fit his character, though.
For sure. He's got 15 knockouts. The guy has hands, that's for sure. And I think he wins by knockout here, and probably the first against Williams.
No, I agree. This is and you can help a noob out here. How is it that he's not with UFC anymore? Because I think his last UFC appearance was a win, was it not?
It was, yeah. He beat Gilbert Aldana, which is actually a pretty impressive thing. Aldana, unfortunately, has passed away since then, drowned in a boating accident. But Aldana was a guy with a cast iron chin. I mean, the ref had to stop the fight because he just wouldn't go up. He's talking to him, saying, you got to defend yourself. And he's like, shut up, I'm not giving up. You're going to have to kill me, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the ref had to end up stopping the fight. But, yeah, that was his last fight in the UFC. He's been back since, which is unfortunate. I think it was a contract thing, if I were to guess. I think Bontello wanted more money than they were going to give him, which is too bad. I think he's a guy that could be back in the UFC if he really wanted to be.
I can't imagine he's getting paid a ton in Strikeforce. Not to fight Carter Williams, anyway.
You never know. I don't know.
I'd be surprised if he's getting a better payday there. I mean, Bontello was a guy that fought for the UFC title, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Back when Arlovsky liked to throw punches.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Certainly, I mean, based on what I've seen of Bontello, I mean, you'd have to figure he'd be, I could see him in the mix for the title now. I mean, not as a heavy favorite or anything, but certainly could compete.
Yeah, he's a guy that you would want to see against the top level heavyweights if they're bringing a Wendell and Nogueira fight, or
I would have rather seen him fight Krokop in his debut than Eddie Sanchez.
Yeah,
who cost him my title, jerk. sorry to throw that in there. This is one that I would be shocked if Bontello lost.
Yeah.
Because, he's just got better pedigree than Williams, and it's an MMA fight, and for goodness sake, the guy's been active and solid over the last 2 years. He only lost to Arlovsky in a title bout.
Yeah.
Blech. There you go. I mean, I think this is a gimme.
Yep. Move up another one. We've got Joey Villaseñor, who was originally scheduled to take on Mario Hua. Then Hua didn't pass his physical, and he was going to take on Felipe Vitali. And now Hua is back on the card.
There
so
go.
We got
makes it a better fight.
Joey Villasenor and Mario Ninja Hua for the vacant middleweight title.
My understanding is this is for some sort of belt, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The middleweight title is vacant right now. There's and this will be deciding who wins it.
Yeah, well, outstanding. Nothing like a title fight, you know.
Yeah.
On a pay-per-view, no less. You know, Villasenor has certainly been around. Hard to pick against Arua, though.
Yeah.
You know, both of these guys have been on the wrong end of bouts to top-level fighters recently. You know, Villasenor got knocked out by Robbie Lawler back in October. Arua's dropped bouts to Filho and Kang early last year. You know, both guys have won since then. You know, Joey Villasenor is a real good fighter, and I think he's real, real well-rounded. But it's hard to pick against. It's hard to pick against Ninja Arua, who I think is a little more skilled with his Muay Thai and his ground skills, and I think is going to get. If he doesn't get a decision, I think he'll get a late submission. On Villasenor, I think he's a little bigger of a guy, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he'll have a bit of a size advantage and be able to impose his game plan a little easier.
Yeah, I think. I think Hua is a little bit bigger than Villasenor. That having been said, we actually disagree on this one. I'm going to go with Hua, with Villasenor.
Holy God, it took us an hour and a half.
Yeah, look at that. yeah, I'm going to go with Villasenor here. I think he's got the better game than Hua, and I think he's got a little bit more momentum. You know, even though he's lost two out of his last four, you know, one was a decision to Rio Chonin, and the other one was a flying knee that came out of nowhere against Robbie Lawler at Pride 32.
That was exciting.
Yeah, that was insane. I mean, 22 seconds of the fight and it was over. I just couldn't believe that one.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Good to be a fan.
Yeah. And then you've got Hua, who I think if his fight with Alex Reed at the last cage rage had gone a little bit longer, I don't know if you saw that one. It was nasty. I mean, Reed got a cut on his shin.
Yeah.
It was bleeding like
that.
Crazy.
Yeah, he was gushing.
Yeah, it was gross.
Great. Come on now. People look for the crimson mask.
Yeah.
The Muda scale. Come on now. You know, like when Smith didn't get caught in that UFC 72 last weekend, people didn't get to the TV closer. Sure, they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on now. You know it's a good card when you're watching the main bout and there's blood on the canvas.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's... And before that, you know, whenever Hua has fought the big guys, he hasn't won. He's got, you know, Dennis Kang, Paulo Filho, Quentin Jex, Sergey Karatanov, Kevin Randleman, and Ricardo Arona.
Yep. You're right.
Danielson, they've all beaten him. Mario Sperry is the only guy, really, that was at the top of the game when he beat him in 2002. So I've got Villasenor here.
The counter-argument is, do you put Villasenor in that category of guys that Rua's lost to? I'm not sure you can, and that's why I'm going the other way. Having said that, I think that, to me, of all the fights we've talked about so far, on guys at least we know, I think this is the most evenly matched fight on the card.
Yeah.
Up until you come to the main event, which I'm not sure is as evenly matched as it looks, but up until this point, you know, I think this is going to be this should be a good back and forth, evenly matched sort of fight. And like I say, it's another good reason to sit down and watch the card.
Yeah. Yep. It's going to be a good fight. I'll be interested to see how it goes. Of course, that brings us to the main event, the Battle of the Mouths, Phil Cerrone and Frank Shamrock.
I can't wait to do this. I think I've watched the promo probably six times. I could probably, you know, recite it to you. You know, it's so refreshing to get, you know, if you watch a lot of sports, if you watch a lot of ESPN, Fox Sports, TSN, wherever you are, and you watch the interviews of players in pretty much any sport or boxers or anybody in combat sports, they all say the same thing. And then you have Frank Shamrock and Phil Barone. And it's just so refreshing that, you know, and they both intersperse enough profanity just to make it more textured, and I think it's fantastic. I would love to have these guys. I wish there was some way they could wear mics during their while they're fighting. Because you know when they're in the clinch or they're in the guard or they're kind of locked up that they're going to be yip-yapping in each other's ear. And I would just love to have, I wish, you know, it costs another $5 to get that feed. I'd pay it in a heartbeat. You know, I mean, this should be, a, I mean, the hype for this fight is great just because it's not so much that you're expecting to see top-level fighters, which, you know, you can make the argument that these guys are elite fighters. It's the hype of the conflict. And that's what makes this fight good to watch.
Yeah.
Frank Shamrock has been around.
Yeah.
I mean, for a noob like me to get introduced to Frank Shamrock and kind of go back through his history and his past in UFC and whatnot is a bit of an education in the mixed martial arts world. And, you know, like it or not, you know, he is a bit of a legend in MMA. I mean, there's no – it's hard to dispute that. I did have the opportunity to watch his last fight against Renzo Gracie, and I thought he came off like a bit of an ass, truthfully. I remember watching the fight, and the referee clearly told him to stop hitting Gracie in the head, and he kept hitting Gracie in the back of the head. And the referee told him again, don't hit him in the back of the head, and he kept hitting him in the back of the head, and then shock of shocks, he gets disqualified.
Yeah.
And, you know, afterwards, he just acted like a pompous ass. So then you put him, you know, you juxtapose him against someone like Phil Baroni, who, you know, New York Badass is his nickname. And for crying out loud, if that's not the most appropriate nickname I could think of, you know, strike me dead. And he pulls no punches with his words either. And I think this would be a fantastic. I'd be disappointed if this fight ends early. I really will. I like Baroni in this fight, actually. I thought Shamrock got a little too easily frustrated in his fight against Gracie, which led to his DQ. And I'm wondering if during the fight that Baroni can't flake him out at the same way to make Shamrock make a mistake and Baroni take care of him. You know, Baroni's been in there with some tough, tough guys recently. Shamrock's been a little less active over the last few years. And I'm just wondering if that's going to make the difference, especially if the fight goes longer. That the longer I see it going, the more I see Baroni having the advantage. And I'm going to go with Baroni by decision because it'll set up a rematch. Because you know if it's a decision, Shamrock will bitch and moan about it if he loses. Baroni will bitch and moan about it if he loses, and Strikeforce will jump right on it and rematch these guys. And I think it'd be great. I hope it's. I really hope it's a good fight. I really hope these guys put on a show because the pre-show. This is what convinced me to buy the damn card.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know.
This is definitely why people are buying the card.
If you're a born and bred, if you just came in, you know, the Ultimate Fighter 1, and you're a UFC noob, and there's no shame in that, you know, and you're learning the mixed martial arts game, you know, you don't know who Frank Shamrock is, and you might have heard of Phil Baroni, but you probably don't know who he is. But if you watch the promos for this fight and you couldn't, you know, pull the trigger, especially if you pulled the trigger on UFC 72 last weekend, which ended up being a meh card, but, you know, wasn't hyped to be much of a card in the first place, then you should be able to pull the trigger, you know, and pick this one up and see some guys that you may not have heard before, but certainly have some name recognition among the hardcore guys.
Yep.
And I think they're marketed in this perfect. I mean, like I said, I was hooked I was going to watch it anyway by my association with the Torch and just to stay informed. But then I watched the preview and I'm like, I got to watch this fight. You know, I mean, how could he not? It's a fan's imperative. I'm going to go with Baroni by decision. What do you got?
You know, it's a tough fight to call, honestly.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it is.
I mean, Shamrock, you know, obviously is notoriously inactive. Then he comes in and loses by DQ to Renzo Gracie. I think Shamrock has the better ground game. I think stand-up might be kind of a toss-up, really, between these two guys. Baroni definitely has knockout power, you know, one-punch knockout power. But Shamrock does too, you know. So it's a tough call.
Yeah, I think they'll stand until Shamrock wants to try to take it down. And I'll be interested to see how well Baroni can keep him up.
Well, you know, for as maligned as Baroni has been for his ground game, he's only got one loss by submission.
Yep.
And that was to Pete Sell in a guillotine choke. And if he fought Matt Lindland, he's fought Evan Tanner. You know, he fought Matt Lindland twice. You know, obviously lost both times, but you know, he wasn't finished by Lindland. So there's something to be said for that. But at the same time, Shamrock has tapped Jeremy Horn to a knee bar. You know, he's got a lot of submission wins. But what does that mean when they're all 10 years ago? You know, I don't know. So
that's the question you got to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Right there.
I think it may come down to cardio. And if that's the case, I've got Shamrock. I'm going to take Shamrock by, Shamrock by knockout in the third. TKO.
There you go. If it goes three rounds, I'll be happy. I don't even care who wins.
Yeah.
If it goes three rounds of good action, which I think it will, I'll be happy. I think this would be a good card to watch. I think you'll see a wide range of skills on this card.
Yeah, it's definitely all over the place.
For the new fan. Yeah, all over the place. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely, definitely.
Well, good. We got a lot of time in that one. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up with the with that. Any parting shots on this one, Jerry?
A couple things for you know, torch readers to note, and things that, you know, kind of keep on the horizon. Sarah and Hughes are going to go in November in New Jersey. So for all you East Coast fans, you'd be able to catch Matt Sarah defend his title in his backyard. You know, at UFC 79, apparently.
Yeah, Hughes is going to get killed by that crowd. Can I just say that? Hughes is going to get booed at the freaking state.
Country boy, welcome to New Jersey.
I think
I'm going to try to check down the road for that one, because I think that'll be fun. And aside from that, you know, I think, you know, folks, check out the card. Come join us on the torch, especially since we, you know, just dissed BJ Penn. By both of us picking Pulver, we'd like to hear your feedback, your comments, your arguments. Sean's got his own. I have his own. You know, and feel free to visit us at MMA Torch message board.
Yep. Let me just echo that. Come see us on forums. We got a lively community out there. Not a whole lot going on this week so far, but certainly a lot to talk about, so come and check us out there. We're going to have some coverage of the Strikeforce event. I'll be covering it myself. Even though I am working at 5:30 in the morning on Saturday morning, I do this for you, the Torch Reader. I will be covering the event for you. Saturday night, I'll probably be having some live thoughts for the tough finale, and we'll probably look at doing a roundtable on Saturday night. I'm not going to be up for it Friday night when I'm getting up in, you know, 3 hours after the event, but Saturday we can react to both events if that's the case. But that's a possibility coming up. I kind of just sprung it on Jerry, so we'll see what, we'll see what happens with that. As far as that goes, I think that's about it for me. Jerry, thanks for joining me on the show again.
No problem.
And for Jerry Cannelly, this is Sean Eddick. Thank you for listening.